Just wanted to welcome you today. If you want to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm John Fleming, the founding director for the National Afro-American Museum at Wilberforce, Ohio.
What are your thoughts about the museum reopening, and have you really been anticipating this for quite some time?
Well, I was very saddened to see that it closed a little over a year ago, and I think that for a while the future of the institution might have been a little uncertain, but I think that once the specialists got in there and cleaned out the mold, and they made a decision that they would take out the permanent exhibit, at least for now, and reinstall several changing exhibits. The exhibit that was in there was the exhibit that opened the museum in 1988, From Victory to Freedom, African-American Life in the 1950s. So it was about time for it to come out and for the museum to begin to think about its future direction and how it's going to serve both the local and regional communities.
And you put a lot of time and effort in getting that museum up and running. Talk a little bit about what that effort entailed, and when you left the museum, how you left it, and what kind of shape did you think it was in when you left it?
Well, I joined the Ohio Historical Society, the organization responsible for developing the museum, in 1980, and was told that usually it takes about 10 years to go from an idea to a completed project. And I said, oh, no, I can develop this museum in 5 years. It's not going to take 10 years. It actually took 8 years, from 1980 to its opening in 1988. We recruited some of the best scholars in the country to work on the project, John Hope Franklin, Charles Wesley, Rayford Logan, you name them. These were the senior advisors. Plus, we had additional historians and economists, political scientists. The guest curator who served on the project was from the Smithsonian, Faith Davids Ruffin. And we had the best exhibit development team, as well as a wonderful architectural team. We worked well together and was able to pull this project off the ground. Now, one interesting thing was that we started the project with no artifacts. And because we said that we were going to be a national Afro-American museum, we felt like we needed to have a collection that represented national African-American history. So we set out within a year to collect materials, and we decided that we would open the museum with a 20th century exhibit, the last decade in which America was a segregated society. The 1950s, and we thought it would be fairly easy to collect artifacts from the 50s. But one thing we discovered was that the donors, potential donors, were still using many of the artifacts. So we were going in asking them for the linoleum off their floors, the rugs, the furniture that some of them were still using. And what we found was that many people did not necessarily think that these things were of historical value. And they would say, come with me to the attic or to the basement. I want to show you some other things. And we ended up getting as many artifacts and documents from the 19th century as we did from the 20th century. And people who had saved their ancestors' free papers and other things relating to slavery in the post-slavery period thought that this was great. For the first time, they would have a place where these things could be deposited and they could have some assurance that they were going to be safe. So it was a lot of effort, and the museum was well received when we opened in 1988. The governor, Ohio senators, state representatives. We had a fairly large crowd and a wonderful weekend of gala activities when the museum opened. I stayed with the museum for from 1988 to 1998, and then I went to Cincinnati to develop the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. When I left, the museum had a budget of $1.3 million, had a staff of 23 people, had some of the best-trained curators, registrar, educators in the country. The museum was nationally recognized, and we were developing exhibits that were being taken by the Smithsonian and other institutions around the country, traveling exhibits such as When the Spirit Moves, the history of the African dance and its influence on American culture. We did national programming during the bicentennial of the Constitution and the Northwest Ordinance. We did a program with Norma Quarles and Julian Bond on Blacks in the Constitution. We had the premiere, the international premiere of the Denmark Vesey Rebellion film in Columbus at the Columbus Theater downtown. So I would say, when you ask me how did I leave the museum in 1998, I think it was in very good shape, had a solid program that served both the national and local communities, and had a good budget. So I was pleased with the foundation that I left there.
And how did it make you feel when you looked at the museum closing because of mold? And it looked like those who were in charge sort of dropped the ball.
The fact that the mold developed in the museum as extensively as it did told me that someone was not on duty. Someone was not keeping watch over the collection there, the exhibits. We had very expensive monitoring material that machinery that would indicate the temperature and humidity. If one became too high or too low, it became obvious that these things were to be tested and monitored every day. We had very sophisticated heating and cooling systems, and the fact that the systems were turned off during part of the year, and the fact that there was a water main break, and that in itself was not monitored as it should have been with all of that water that was in the museum. So I'm not surprised that this happened. At the same time, I'm pleased that it's been cleaned up, it's ready to open, and it can set off on a new direction for the future.
Now, some folks will say that Wilberforce is not a prime or good location for the museum, that there's not enough foot traffic. There's seemingly an inability of the area to promote it properly. Do you think Wilberforce is a good location for the museum? And what will Mr. Wash, who's the director now, and his staff have to do to make this a successful run now that it's reopening?
Well, we realized from the very beginning the handicap that the museum faced being located off the beaten path. The museum was set out at Wilberforce because of the historical nature of that community going back generations before the Civil War, and the fact that two or three educational institutions are located in the adjacent area, Central State, Wilberforce, and Payne Seminary, and adding a fourth, I thought that there would be enough synergy to make it a very vibrant community. And we've talked about developing a graduate program in museum studies, museum education in conjunction with the universities and possibly with Wright State. That never got off the ground like we had hoped, but there's still the potential for that. Realizing that we were, well, at the highest, I think the highest numbers when we first opened was about 48,000 visitors a year, and that dropped down to average out to about 25,000 to 30,000. I think that Dr. Walsh and the staff there can do an excellent job in terms of involving the school systems in the area, getting high school and elementary students into the museum on a regular basis, involving the public, developing public programs, both with the institutions there. But we always knew that we had to do outreach, that we wanted to develop national traveling exhibits, and we did develop some of the finest traveling exhibits around the country. We developed a history curriculum that was used in 48 of the 50 states. We did public programming, both the radio and TV stations. And we knew that only by doing this outreach, we had national conventions that were held at Wilberforce and in the Dayton area. The Association for the Study of African American Life and History held one of its national meetings in Dayton, and people came out to the museum. So the museum can have a national impact and a regional impact. I think it's just a matter of being creative and innovative in terms of the thinking of the staff there.
And you have a couple of exciting projects going on now in South Carolina and Jackson, Mississippi. Talk a little bit about those projects. And also, your life and career has been spent, really doing some fantastic things in terms of archiving African-American history and developing museums and exhibits. Talk a little bit about how you got interested in that. And also your projects in Jackson and South Carolina.
Well, when I left as director of the Freedom Center, I joined the staff of the Cincinnati Museum Center as head of the three museums there and the collections, educational programming, the library archives, as well as the nature preserved out in Adams County. While I was there, I did a project with the National Geographic Society and Arts and Exhibitions International on the slave ship Whydah. And that led to working with Tavis Smiley and becoming the executive producer for America I Am, the African American imprint, which was the largest comprehensive exhibit on African-American history ever developed as a traveling exhibit. It's 15,000 square feet. It has been traveling for 4 years, and it's currently at the Gantt Museum in Charlotte. Once I completed that project, I was invited by the mayor of Charleston to help plan and develop the International African-American Museum in Charleston. 40% of all enslaved Africans came through the port of Charleston, and we say that 80% of all African Americans, if they could trace their history, could find at least one person or more who came through the port of Charleston. In my case, my African ancestry, all of them came through the port of Charleston up to western North Carolina. So that exhibit, I've been working on that exhibit for 3 years. We've done all the planning for the design of the building, the exhibitions, educational programming, and now it's a matter of the team there raising the $60 million to actually do the construction. I'm currently working on the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum, a state-sponsored museum on the history of civil rights in Mississippi from 1945 to 1975, and it is a fascinating project to work on. I think that it's going to be one of the most influential and important exhibitions and exhibits, I'm sorry, museums, because Mississippi was one of the states that, of course, imposed segregation and discrimination, is now turning around saying that we want to be part of the solution to race in America. And so it's a accurate, horrendous look at what took place in Mississippi in order to keep blacks suppressed. And it's going to tell a story that will be shocking to some, but we hope that once people go through the exhibit, that and by facing accurately our past, we can begin to deal with our future, build upon the mistakes that we have made, and hopefully by working through their programming and educational offices once the museum opens, that it will form the basis for true racial reconciliation.
And how did you develop an interest before, obviously, you got to this point in your career? How did it all start?
Well, it was very interesting. I was working for a Ford-funded institute in Washington, the Institute for the Study of Educational Policy, and we had at least half of our board members who were college presidents, and one of them was president of Central State, Lionel Newsom. We were talking one night about the state developing a state national project, African-American museum project, and they were looking for a director. And he asked me over dinner if I would be interested, and not knowing anything about museums, how to develop a museum, how to work with architects or anything like that. It sounded like an interesting project, and I said, sure, I would be interested. And I gave him my resume, and a year later I was called out to the Ohio Historical Society in Columbus, interviewed and offered the job the very same day. And I've been in the museum profession since 1980, and have enjoyed every day of it since then.
If you could give Dr. Walsh some very simple advice about how to proceed, what would that be?
Well, simple advice probably is the most difficult advice to give. I think that first of all, you have to have a passion for what you do. You have to feel it. You have to want. This has to be part of your life every day. And my wife can tell you that it was certainly part of mine for the last 30 years. And I think that's then becomes reflected in your commitment, in your work, and in the quality of the programming and exhibitions that you do, because you know that you are the caretakers of a history that has been largely ignored for centuries. And if you don't do it right, then it will not be done. So I would say you have to have a real passion and commitment for what you're doing.
As you look at your expansive body of work, do you ever think about your legacy and how you would like your work to be labeled as or remembered as when you decide that you're not going to do it anymore?
Well, years ago, when I was a graduate student at Howard University, I ran across this term, race men and race women, and in looking at the history of African American people, you always found people that you could call race men and race women. These were people who had ordinary jobs, were members of the community, but who were dedicated to preserving our history and our culture, and in everything that they were involved in, centered on that preservation and wanted to make sure that the values that we have as a group of people, as a community, were passed on to the next generation. And I think that this is how we were able to overcome the hardships and handicaps imposed by slavery. We emphasized education, developing educational institutions. Even our college and universities often were started in the basements of one-room churches or other buildings. And I think preserving that history, being called he was a race man. He was a person who wanted to preserve the best of African-American history and culture. That's the way that I would like to be remembered.
Well, Dr. Fleming, I want to thank you for spending some time with us and certainly talking about a very exciting career, all the exciting projects, and the museum reopening. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.